threaten its use more easily, essentially,
right.
and use that to restore deterrence in some kind of conflict.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Again, fascinating discussion with Matt Korda. He's a research associate for the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists, where he co-authors a nuclear notebook published on the website, the Bulletin for Atomic Scientists. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today here on Flashpoints.
Thanks so much for having me.
That does it for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Kevin Pina and Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee will meet Wednesday the 17th at 4:30 p.m. for the month of July.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. At 11:30 is Art Focus. Joseph Galavan interviews New York artist Nicola Lopez about her print show, Hybrids, at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. And now at Stage and Studio, Dime Roberts talks with author Nisi Shawl about their epic debut novel that centers on an imaginary utopia called Everfair.
I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music by Portland composer and musician David Ornette Cherry. You can hear his music at davidornettecherry.com. Today we check in with Seattle author Nisi Shawl about Everfair. What a beautiful name, Everfair. Imagine a country formed right after the bloody reign of King Leopold of Belgium, who committed genocide in his conquest of the Congo. And Nisi Shawl's book, Those Escaping King Leopold, created a new utopian country, a fictional one called Everfair. It's formed with Africans, Americans, and Europeans all living together. And in this new country, they harness steam power before other countries do. So exciting. Everfair has received positive reviews from the Washington Post, Seattle Times, and the LA Review of Books. And joining us now is author Nisi Shawl. Nisi, are you there?
I'm there.
Hi, you are here. Welcome to Stage and Studio, Nisi. Well, Everfair, you know, I just want to say congrats. It's a stellar book. And it's, you know, it's your first official debut novel. You've been a writer for, you know, you're a veteran writer. And it's so great that you launched this book and it's gotten so much positive response. And what an epic series of stories with multiple characters and viewpoints within a 30-year period from 1889 to 1919. I don't think there is a subject you didn't cover. I mean, it's historically based, although Everfair is a fictional country, and you bring out interracial relationships, mixed race, lesbian relationships, colonialism, African independence, King Leopold's genocide in the Congo. I mean, there's so much historic research, multiple country locations, even magic realism, and steam-powered airships, or what you call air canoes. I mean, Everfair has practically everything on it. Is there a subject I didn't cover just now?
I delved a bit into disability studies.
That's right. Yes, yes. Tell us about
there
that.
There are the prosthetic arms, and that sort of thing was necessary because of the naming punishments that Leopold's thugs delivered. So that one too.
Well, that was also some of the inventions too. I'm going to cover the inventor pretty soon, but there were, you know, there were some inventions that were revolutionary at Everfair. Along with the air canoes, there was also the prosthetic limbs that were built in response to all the violence and the mutilations. So
yeah.
So refresh our memories about your pathway to writing Everfair. What was your initial inspiration?
It was sort of a dare I gave myself. I was on a panel at the World Fantasy Convention in 2009, and it was a steampunk panel, and I took up a contrarian position stating that I thought that steampunk was foul, and I reviled it for its support of colonialism.
Interesting.
Which, like, it was in every piece of steampunk that I read, just about every piece. So, in front of a huge audience of like 200 people, and with, you know, my future editor on the panel, I swore that I would write a piece of steampunk that addressed those issues and set things straight. And that's what Everfair was supposed to be. And it seems like it worked for most people.
7 years later, there it is, right? Well, you know, in thinking about that, there is a lot of colonialism. It is about, you know, because it is about the Victorian times, you know. And so that is part of, you know, part of the narrative, isn't it? So you wrote an alternate narrative.
Well, it was not just that it was part of the zeitgeist, as it were, but that a lot of the steampunks that I read sort of glorified it. That, you know, a lot of the stories, the novels, were saying that it was a good thing. Imperialism was the best.
So that is the way of life that should happen, especially with third world countries.
Exactly. I didn't know about it at the time, but there was already a burgeoning movement in opposition to this. There were authors and editors like Diana Faux and Maggie Killjoy and Jamie Goh who were proposing that maybe there was something going on in steampunk beyond white people having adventures in third world countries.
So, of course, when you started writing your neo-Victorian novel, did you do it as a series of short stories then? And as sort of, because I read somewhere that some of the characters appeared in a short story earlier, you know, before the book.
Well, what happened was, as I was writing the story, I got an invitation, a couple of invitations, actually, to submit short stories to anthologies. So what I did was take a couple of chapters from the novel that I was working on and make them into short stories.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
I've written three stories that also feature the characters and world assumptions of Everfair. And one of them is already published, a horror story from King Leopold's point of view, because what else could it be but horror if it was from his point of view? That's Vulcanization at Nightmare Magazine. Then I sold two more that take place just a few months after Everfair ends. They will be appearing in 2017. In an anthology called Sun Vault, a story that I wrote set on Zanzibar with Rosalie and Lori, that will be The Colors of Money. And then in Clockwork Cairo, you have Rima and Princess Mwadi and Prince Ilunga, and they will be in a piece called Sun River in Clockwork Cairo next year. So those are coming, and then, of course, I still have to work out. Well, I've got the outline for a sequel now, a novel, and now I guess I better write it.
So is you mean there's going to be a sequel to Everfair? Because I was going to ask you about that later, but is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Interesting. Interesting. Because I was kind of sad it was over. So that's interesting to me. Well, you know, I just want to remind my listeners, this is Stage and Studio. I'm DMA Roberts. My guest is Seattle writer Niecy Shaw, author of Everfair. If you missed any of the show, you can hear it later today at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. So I want to talk, that's interesting for the writers who are listening right now, that you can take certain parts of your book and turn them into short stories, and, you know, not only, you know, help in your writing process, but also to maybe build up a following for the book. Did you find that that helped a lot?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it did, but I think that people were following me because of other stuff. So the short stories helped people to look forward to it and anticipate their Everfair. But they were already anticipating stuff from me, I think.
Well, I hope so. Well, so when you decided to write something that had steampunk elements, I don't want to say this is totally steampunk because your book is so historically based that, you know, that there are other elements, obviously, especially when you were talking about the genocide of King Leopold's Belgium, you know, of Belgium's colonization of the Congo. Did you find that was widely known? I mean, is that why you picked that particular moment in history to, you know, sort of publicize that more?
I thought it was not as well known as it deserved to be. And I had recently read, I'm probably not pronouncing his name correctly, but Adam Hochschild's nonfiction about King Leopold and that era. It's called King Leopold's Ghost. So I had read that, and I highly recommend it. Very moving, and it was probably why I had that time period in mind.
Yeah, so that really affected you, so you wanted to... I mean, it's really the central aspect of your book.
Well, yes. And then things came naturally out of that. What I found was that I wanted to do this thing, and then I wanted a vehicle to be able to show people how beautiful this world could be if it had just gone a little differently.
Right.
So I was doing some reading, and I read about Fordlandia, which was Henry Ford's sort of capitalist colony in Brazil. He was the auto manufacturer.
Yeah, I've never heard of Fordlandia. That's amazing to me to even hear that right now.
Fordlandia was his attempt to sort of have vertical integration. He had people on the ground in, I think it was in Brazil, who were growing rubber trees, harvesting the rubber from them, and then processing it so that he had a source of rubber that was readily available to him and only to him to make tires for the cars that he was making. So I thought, oh, Fordlandia, well, that would have been strictly hierarchical, strictly capitalist, but what if socialists had done this? Because there were a lot of utopias around that time, people trying new ways of organizing the world and organizing their lives, and I thought it would work, and it did.
Well, I have so many favorite characters in Everfair, and you have so many that you list a cast of characters right at the very front of the book, but I just want to mention a few because they're just my favorite. Lizette, am I pronouncing her name? Tortonet, is that correct pronunciation?
I'm a French student, so I say it Tutunier.
Well, Tutunier. So you said it so much better than me. And she's a mixed-race black Belgian, you know, which is... Right off the bat, you had me, you know? And she falls in love with Daisy Albin, a founder of the Fabian Society, or one of the founders. And for those who don't know about the Fabians, they were very utopian-oriented. In fact, George Bernard Shaw and H.G. Wells were also members of the Fabian Society. Why did you choose this particular, you know, aspect, I guess, of the Fabians? They were really instrumental to founding Everfair.
Well, because they could have.
Yes, yes.
They had the money to do it. and instead they founded the London School of Economics. I should say that all of these characters are based on, well, almost all. I think there are two of my main characters that are not based on real historical figures. Daisy is modeled on Edith Nesbit, who was one of the founders of Fabians. And Jackie Owen, who is in the novel, is one of the Fabian Society's founders. He's modeled on H.G. Wells and George Bernard Shaw.
I did not know that. Well, that even makes me want to go back and look at Jackie Owens as a character. So another favorite character of mine is Fwendi. Am I pronouncing her name right? She's an African who works as a spy. And I don't want to give too much away, but she can also transport herself into animals, you know? That's where the magic realism came into it for me. How did you come up with that concept? What is that based on?
Reality. My reality, anyway. I think that's why they call it magic realism.
Right,
some of this magic is real.
Okay.
I was thinking of the ways that people can sort of throw their consciousness into other places, other people, other things.
Yeah.
And that's the way I saw it happening for her.
Well, I have to personally thank you for including Asian characters in Everfair because, Asians have migrated to Africa in history, but, you know, that's another neglected aspect of a culture. But Ho Lin Huang, otherwise known as Tink, is the primary inventor and engineer in Everfair. And was there a historical inspiration for that character?
Tink and Fwendi are both the two characters that I basically had to invent whole myself. Tink, I had to do some research, but I will say that the Macau railway workers that become refugees and join in with Everfair were based on an actual historical element. They really did exist, and they really did. At one point, they were working, building this railroad for Leopold, and they looked around, they looked at each other, they said, "This is terrible. This is hell. Which way is east? Let's go back to China." And, you know, they set off through the bush and, of course, did not make it back to China. But they left a legacy with several towns and villages in the area that they came to.
Interesting.
There are still cultural and genetic markers that there were East Asian people coming through here.
Well, you know, Tink invents a lot. You know, we mentioned airships and prosthetic limbs. What kind of research did you do on the science of those?
Oh, so much.
I know. It seems like it. It was so detailed in your descriptions.
I mean, I wished I could make this sort of like hard steampunk. Of course, when you're doing fiction, you get to make a few things up. I used as much description as I could of the indigenous metallurgical arts that Tink would have learned on the site, because the people who live in the area that I was writing about were renowned for their skills, casting knives and so forth. I studied as much as I could about lighter than air flight at that time and what was possible. Probably I was a little off in using bark cloth, rubberized bark cloth, as the material for the balloons. That probably wasn't light enough, but I didn't care. I just wanted it.
Well, these air canoes were so integral to the entire 30-year history. I mean, not just for transport, but they played into a lot of the wars that happened too. And there's just vivid descriptions of how they were used and you know, I just found it fascinating, and it seemed kind of realistic to me. You know, I never thought about how well it could have worked. You also did an amazing job with the complexities of colonialism, and especially the viewpoints of sort of the white savior complex that several of the European characters had to come to terms with in founding and then later on co-founding and then, you know, co-governing Everfair, particularly, you know, just the complexities of even between the relationship between Lisette and Daisy, you know, and then Daisy later on not understanding why she was having problems with, you know, the king, Mwendi. Is that Mwendi? Mwenda?
Mwenda.
Yeah. So that was really interesting to me, how you dealt with that complexity.
Yeah, it is complex. Thank you. People are complex, and then when we relate complexity to complexity, it gets even deeper. So I'm glad that came across, because of course it would be great if everything was simple and happily ever after worked, and people did what you expected them to do and did what you told them to do. That's not life, and I wanted to make that as realistic as I could as well.
Well, it also seems true to me today with, I guess what I want to say is, you know, people of color and white allies working together, that there are a lot of complexities in that too. And to me, that kind of signaled a lot of what's happening today, you know, and how we can get along and how we can look at other perspectives when we are, you know, supposedly helping each other, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, I think it's interesting that, you know, that it's such a 30-year journey. And, you know, I don't know if you ever thought about splitting the book into, you know, sections as far as like a trilogy or a sequel, but it sounds like you already are, you know, that there's even more of a story to tell.
Well, I didn't think of writing it out in several volumes, mainly because I find it tiresome to wait for another volume of a trilogy to come out. I just want it all. I want it
right
all now.
Right.
Putting myself in the reader's place, I wanted to get all of it out. And 30 years is a lot of ground to cover in one book. So the few unfavorable remarks I've gotten were, why didn't you make this a trilogy? Well, that's why, because
you want to give it all at once, right? You wanted us to be able to read it all. Well, it's an amazing, amazing book. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Station Studio, talking with author Niecy Shaw about her debut novel, Everfair. And you can find links to the book at stationstudio.org and kboo.fm/stationstudio. You know, we've had such a great conversation, and we're kind of coming to the close here, the last stretch here. But Niecy, we first talked a few years back. I'm not sure how many years, but it's a few years, when I was interviewing you about a project I wanted to do about the famed writer and amazing, you know, friend of yours, Octavia Butler. And you dedicated Everfair to her, and it says, for Octavia, who knew this day would come. So tell us how she inspired you.
She inspired me with her indomitable courage and her persistence, which was one of her watchwords. Persistence is something that comes up again and again in her essays. She also, frankly, gave me money. And let me tell you, that really helps. That helps you to have the courage to go forward and keep doing what you're going to eventually wind up changing the world with. So, yes, she inspired me that way. And also, artistically, she inspired me to look at things. I think there's an epigram in the beginning that is actually attributed to Colette, but it's also the sort of thing that Octavia would say. She always wanted people to look at and experience and pay attention to things that were hard for them to take. And so I'm trying to find here the epigram, something like, look for a long time at that which pleases you and a longer time at that which gives you pain.
Mm.
Well, Colette said that.
Yeah.
I know that Octavia lived that.
Wow. Well, she was a MacArthur genius fellow who, you know, I think the only science fiction writer who's ever won the MacArthur Genius Grant. And so she must have helped a lot of writers, too. You said she, you know, probably, you know, gave you a personal grant. You're a longtime science fiction writer in Seattle, so I've always been impressed by the sci-fi community of writers there. Can you describe a little bit about what that community is like?
It's very warm and nurturing, very supportive. I think that a lot of that is due to the presence of Clarion West here. There's a strong tech industry here. There are all sorts of people who look after one another, who make sure that, you know, we don't starve, that we get the stimulation that we need. We take care of each other. Yeah.
Well, congrats to you again for Everfair. I know it took at least 7 years, right? You were already thinking about it before. But how long do you think you're going to be taking for your next book? You talk about people waiting for the next book, right?
Well, with Everfair, I had several other projects that I had to do at the same time. And also remember, 7 years, that wasn't all being written at that time. It was... There was
a lot that happened. Yes.
Yeah. And the publisher, you know, they took a year too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, I'm just asking, when can we expect it?
I don't know. I have to sell it.
I'm just putting you on the spot there. It's been great talking with you, Niecy Shaw, in depth and about your phenomenal book, Everfair. Really quite an achievement, and I hope you get more and more kudos for it, and you continue to do more speaking tour events, and I hope to meet you someday soon.
Thanks. That would be lovely.
That would be lovely. Thanks for joining me on Stage and Studio.
Thanks for having me.
You take care. Niecy Shaw's debut novel, Everfair, is available on Amazon and basically everywhere. You can find out more about it at Niecy, N-I-S-I, Shaw, S-H-A-W-L.com, or on stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. That's it for Stage and Studio. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org, kbu.fm/stageandstudio, and iTunes. And don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 39th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 19, 20, and 21 at Cathedral Park in North Portland. KBOO will begin the live broadcast Friday at 5 p.m., and Saturday's live feed will get underway at 2 p.m. That's the 39th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, broadcasting Friday and Saturday, July 19th and 20th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. Coming up next is Art Focus. Joseph Galavan interviews New York artist Nicola Lopez about her print show, Hybrids, at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.FM or use our mobile app and click on Donate. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com. And first, we're going to listen to a little Coltrane, and then we'll go to Art Focus.
Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Nicola Lopez. She's a visual artist based in Brooklyn, New York, and her show Hybrids is on Wednesday, the 17th of July through August 31st at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Welcome back to KBOO.
It's great to be here.
So, Nicola, we had you here 5 years ago. And you had a show, I think people remember it as prints with a lot of construction, a lot of towers,